Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us today, or perhaps you're listening on the archives. And if you are, you know that we archive every show over at our website, which is education-talkradio.org. You'll see a You can scroll down right there. You'll see all the shows over the last couple of weeks. But if you go to past shows, the icon up there, it'll take you back to 2011, kind of like a little time machine. All right? And please go over and join our Consortium for Equity. It's hot these days. Equity and Access is the journal we publish over at our website, ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's an acronym for the American Consortium for Equity in Education. Please join with us. Make your voice heard. Everything we do over there is free, including a subscription to our magazine, Equity and Access, ace-ed.org. I got to thank my friends over at Waterford Institute. They've been good friends over the years. Okay, and they are sending me today's guest. And we're going to talk about dyslexia and some basic stuff about it and how we can really help kids who have dyslexia. And I want to talk to Kathy about how we can help them, particularly now in this age of remote learning. It's Kathy Ambridge, who is an implementation specialist for Waterford. You can learn more about them if you don't know it already over at waterford.org. Okay, she's in Spring, Texas. Let me bring her on the show right now and we'll get our conversation started all about dyslexia. And Kathy, welcome to the show. It's Larry here.
Hi, Larry. This is Kathy.
It's good. I hope it's Kathy. You're my guest today, and I'm thrilled to have you here. You're down in Spring, Texas. Where is Spring?
Just right outside Houston.
Oh, okay.
Just a suburb.
I hate to bring up something bad, but the pandemic's raging, as you know, and I keep seeing, since you said outside of Houston, you said Houston's on the news so much with the pandemic.
Yep.
From your point of view down there, I hate to start that way, but let's get the elephant in the room out of the way. How are things down there? From your point of view,
it's just as bad. It's just as bad as what you hear on the TV. It is.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No.
You know, we're all wearing masks. We're all being careful, but unfortunately, it's crazy times right now.
It certainly is crazy times right now. And please stay safe down there, Kathy. Okay.
Try
extra hard, please. Okay. I live up in Maine. And I live in southern Maine, and Maine is not being hit, so at least so far, like other states are, okay? And there is a little bubble, but not much, around Portland, Maine. But we're doing okay, and our courses are going down. But when I see this stuff about Houston and Miami on TV, it's just as horrifying. So I'm sorry you're down there in such crazy times. Jeez, such a nice city, too, Houston. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It
is. Keep going. Please.
Well, schools are getting ready to start. We have schools that are going to start next week, and then schools that will start the 1st of August, and then schools starting the middle of August, kind of going in phases. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. So,
what's your take on it just from being a member of the community? You think people are going to send their kids back?
I know my grandkids are going to go back. You know, we all realize, I think all parents realize that school is more than just academic.
Without question.
You know, we have a
without question.
And I think that, yeah, so, but the parents are being offered online or at school. I do believe, though, once we all start, I do believe Houston will shut down again. So we shall see.
Yeah. Unfortunately, if I may say so, and I'm kind of giggling a little bit, I think you're right. Okay, but what you said just struck me as interesting. Are the parents given a choice of sending their kids or doing online? Oh,
yes.
Well, that's...
they are given a choice. Yeah.
Well, that's
they
not
have to
so
sign
bad.
Up. And teachers.
If it works. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Because teachers are given the choice. They can either do the online or they can teach in person. So, yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Very interesting.
That is very interesting. I had not heard that. The the last crazy thing I heard was that I don't have this corroborated per se, but I heard that in Nevada they're making teachers sign. They want to open the schools in person, and they're making teachers sign a disclaimer. saying that neither the state or the school district is responsible in case they get COVID. Now, I heard that from someone who lives there. I'm not sure. I can only pass on what I heard. Their daughter's a teacher. But it's scary times. And I like the fact that they're giving teachers and parents, not so much kids, parents, the choice. Okay?
The choice.
And boy, that's going to be hard to do. I don't know what's going on.
It's very hard.
Woo! And I think you're right.
It's
going to
be
and close them.
And I've been, right now, it's very crazy. So we shall see. But, I have been in education for 40 years. I was a teacher. And this is, unprecedented times. We have, this has never had anything like this.
You're exactly right. And, I'll say one other thing before we get started on the dyslexia. We are asking teachers to do something that they're not trained to do, and that is teach online, which is
absolutely
a whole different pedagogy, if I may, whole different technique, and we're saying go do this, all right, and nobody really has the great understanding on how to do it, and the fact that we've done so well so far is, I guess, a good sign. I just we'll see what happens, but the social, you were right when you said at the beginning, the socialization aspect matter so much, but this is interesting. You just said it. You've been in education for 40 years. Okay, so you started when you were what, 5 years old? Is that correct?
At 12.
You're counting the 12 years, of course, that you went to school. I get it now.
There
okay.
you go.
There, see that started when you were five. Okay, but what I found interesting when you sent me a little information about yourself, you started 40 years ago, but you've worked with dyslexic students 21 years now, since 1999. Okay, so what did you do before that, and what got you involved with the dyslexic kids?
Well, let me just, I graduated college. I went to Marshall University, so I'm from the East Coast, if you know where that is.
Marshall's West Virginia, right?
Yes, sir. Born and raised.
There you go.
But at the time I graduated, there were no jobs in West Virginia. So I had my early childhood degree and wanted to teach kindergarten. So got a job in Florida because they were hiring kindergarten teachers at that time, way back then. So I taught kindergarten for a lot of years in pre-K and first grade. So my background is with early childhood. And then decided you cannot teach kindergarten forever. Your knees don't last forever. And went back and got my master's in reading. And in 1999, I became what they call in Texas a master reading teacher, where you know everything or everything you knew about reading, you throw out and start again. I'm reading recovery trained, dyslexic trained, ESL trained, took all the training and really got into the reading. And so in 1999, when I then went out of the classroom and became a reading specialist, the first time ever I got a prescription from a doctor that said, you need to test this child for dyslexia. Because back in 1999, we weren't even talking about dyslexia. We weren't allowed to mention that D word. So very interesting, yes. So that's how I got started with dyslexia.
Wow. Are you dyslexic to some degree, if I may ask?
Well, I think we all are. Have you ever said, wait, which is my left hand? Wait, which is my right hand? What? I think we all are.
I do that all the time.
Okay,
the time.
There you go.
Yeah, so I qualify. I got news for you.
There you go.
All right?
It's
interesting the way this is. And I want to ask you this, again, before we get into the specifics of this. But with dyslexic kids, okay, if I may, now we have remote learning, all right, for a lot of kids. All right.
Yes.
How are the two working together? What do you see on that, Kathy Ambridge?
So here's what I see. Yes, they need, with our dyslexic kids, we need such explicit instruction over and over and working on fluency and listening to themselves read. One of the reasons I do the consulting work with Waterford.org is because they offer all of that through their web. Through Waterford.
I love Waterford.
Yep. I love it. I had actually used Waterford since 1999. Got my kids on there working with when I was in the class back in the classroom. So I have Waterford is near and dear to me as long as working as part and as that supplement to help and support all these children that have disability, I'm going to call it, is a disability that needs some that extra support. And so I could get my dyslexic kids on there and they could read books and they could record themselves, listen to themselves, and then read it back and practice. You know, that's what we need right now. That's what they need, and that's what they needed then and what they need now. And Waterford offers that.
Yeah, where do they offer? Actually, I'm just going to stay on this for a second. I know they sometimes are are shy, but I want to ask you, what are they offering regarding that? Just speak on that. Talk about Waterford and dyslexia. Just take a few minutes
and
do
I'm
that.
Okay, I'm going to talk about it. So I'm going to speak as the teacher who has used it. So
please do.
For my dyslexic students, you know, because of the nature of the disability, they need, and we all need little hooks when it comes to, you know, reading or understanding sounds and letters and how all of them work. And so I would even have my upper, you know, when I was working, I still work with dyslexic kids, teaching them Waterford offers songs. And so, for example, that bossy R, how do you teach that vowel, an R, you know, when a vowel is followed by an R, it makes an unexpected sound. Well, how do you teach that it makes, you know, ER, IR, and UR all say ER? Well, so there's a wonderful song in there called Bossy R. And so I would teach them that song. And it would be funny if I walked around in the classroom. I would walk in a fifth grade classroom where I had a dyslexic student, and they'd be singing, trying to spell a word, but I could hear them singing that little song in their head, you know, kind of just whispering it. But it was something that they had the hook that helped them to remember.
Yeah.
And those are I love the songs. I love the repetition. I love that they can practice that fluency. I love that they can, in Waterford, it's so important with dyslexic kids for their placement of, you know, in order to make sounds, we have to know where our tongue is placed. And Waterford has pictures of real life, your mouth, where should your tongue be when you're making the or the sound. And so it just reinforced everything that we do when we're working with children, with dyslexic children. So it just was wonderful. Still is.
It still is. And, you know, I have to say something. And this always has fascinated me. I was a social studies teacher, and I taught secondary schools, junior high and high school. But teaching of reading, all right, to me is like doing magic. Okay? And that really is the – it really – and it's – I mean this sincerely. It's the basis of education. It's the first of the three R's.
Absolutely.
And I'm the only one that actually starts with an R. Speaking of dyslexia,
correct.
Okay, and reading, writing, and arithmetic, okay, and it's the only one that starts with an R, but I'll tell you, it's the basis of education, but how you take, and I'm saying this to every reading teacher and first and second grade teacher, whatever, you take a child who's a blank slate and you teach them to read, you're literally opening the world to them, okay, and
absolutely.
Without reading teacher, it's an astounding thing when you think about it. I have no idea how I learned to read, but I learned to read, I remember in first grade, I can almost remember learning that, okay, not how I did it, but learning to do it, and it just strikes me as an incredible thing, a real point of magic. So kudos to all the reading teachers like you, Kathy, okay?
Well,
thank you. It really. And I just before we go on, I keep saying that, I want to ask you, I did a show just earlier this morning with a fellow who's going for his PhD. He's a nice guy named Saurabh Anand. He came over here from India to get his PhD. And he's a firm believer in what's called narrow reading. Are you familiar with that?
Well, you know, if you've been in education as long as I have, we just change terms, you know. So what does he really mean? You know, we love to do that as educators. I'm sure it's something that's been around.
And again, I don't know much about this. It's the idea that, I'll say it in an easier way, people sort of learn from repetition. And if you stay on a given theme so that the glossary that you're using, the lexicon, whatever, becomes part of their world, okay, it's easier for them to become literate as opposed to going to all different sources and seeing different authors and all that sort of thing or different themes, all right, and you're jumbling up. It's easier, being narrow in the way in the materials you're using. I guess that's a good way to put it. Has that been around for 12,000 years?
Yes, sir. When we did author studies and we just sat one author for 6 or 9 weeks,
we did. Yeah, and that's cool. That has a word now. Narrow reading. There you go.
Well,
okay.
I'm writing that one down.
Yeah, and you know, if you just Google that, just Google narrow reading, you'll see some stuff on there that'll just pop right up. And it struck me as pretty interesting, to tell you the truth. Okay, again, not knowing how to teach reading at all. You know, so thank you for all this. You indulged me a little bit. Okay, you know, I do talk dyslexia here, and I don't know if you heard me at the beginning. We have a consortium. I hope you take a minute and go over to ace-ed.org. It's a consortium for equity. All right, we're very concerned about equity and access to learning for every kid. Okay, and I'll tell you this. I can tell you I graduated a long time ago from teacher education, and the word dyslexia, literally, and I mean this 100%, never came up. Okay, teaching kids with any kind of special need never came up. Okay, and I didn't learn about it until I was already a teacher. So I think things have changed a little bit, but I don't think they've changed as much as they should. And I'm just going to ask you a basic question. Okay. And you're, by the way, you're an expert in the early years, okay, pre-K through 2, 3. What should a teacher be looking for? Tell them what dyslexia is. I think they kind of know in the back of their mind. But what should they be looking for in a student?
Well, when I'm looking at those characteristics, they're having trouble reading, you know, in isolation. And I'm going to – if I'm looking at a pre-K, let's talk about a four-year-old. Just that learning to talk, and if they're delayed in, we're finding now, and do you know why, and I'm just going to back up a minute, do you know why we're now talking about dyslexia? Well, all the research that we are putting children under the MRI machine with a book, watching their brain as they read. We have isolated the part of the brain where dyslexia is. They are not using, you and I use 3 different parts of our brain when we're reading. But for the dyslexic, they're only and I can give all you the medical terms, but I'm just saying it's one little isolated area in their brain. And so that's why we know so much more about dyslexia. And why, but I agree with you when we say we don't know enough. Very interesting, isn't it? Yeah, we're doing a lot of research.
Now, let me get that straight. They're not using a part of their brain that we're using. That's
they're
what you're
not
saying.
Correct. So you and I are using in the Borka area, the word analysis area, an articulation and word analysis area, which is in the front part of our brain, and then in the back part of their brain where we're using a part of the brain that helps with when to form words. But in the dyslexic brain, they're only using one little part that is just for articulation of words. So it's really not even a part of the brain. It's one little part of the brain that we not impaired use, but they're not using all parts of their brain. So it's why we know so much more.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that we actually use science to determine these things. I think that's so important. Okay, the whole idea of how we learn and why we learn and all that sort of thing. I know you're not a doctor, certainly not a neurosurgeon or anything like that, or a neurologist.
No.
But the question is, and maybe it's an unanswerable question, why aren't they using it? What shuts down? Does anybody know?
It's just how all the neurons that are firing and connecting. And so that's why when we work with dyslexic students, we are building those new pathways through those neuron connections in their brain to help them learn to read.
Thank you. That's a great explanation. I love that.
When we teach. Yeah, and how do we do that? We do that by just repetition over and over and over again. And so as that dyslexic teacher, you're teaching and you're giving them those tools to be successful. But then we also need that support to then, once I've taught it, now what else can I do? And that's why Waterford came in beautifully with, okay, that support is what I taught. Now here's something else for you can do, whether it was at home or at school, which is another, which was great.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to say something to the audience. I'm going to say something to the audience. Waterford, although it's waterford.org, and we think of them as a company, okay, and they are one, okay, and they provide wonderful products for schools, okay, but they are also an institute. They are Waterford Institute.
Yes.
Their products, I know you know this, I'm telling everybody, their products come out of actual experience, All right, mm-hmm. and real solid, strong research. This is not just
Absolutely.
A company. This is Waterford Institute, yeah. and everything they do is real, and that's why they're so darn good at what they do. So let me ask you this: and this is a touchy question, because a teacher thinks that a kid is dyslexic. That's not a fun thing to teach to tell a parent, unless you're darn sure that they are,
Absolutely.
In fact, dyslexic. Because the parent right away
Absolutely.
Might get defensive, think it's, oh, well, you're teaching them improperly. Okay, what are the common signs? What should a teacher look for? You know, there's a standing joke during the pandemic that now finally a lot of the parents are going to finally figure out that maybe it isn't the teacher that's the problem, okay, as they have their kids at home forever. Right? So at any rate, what should a teacher be looking for?
Well, the big thing that I have found in all the years I've worked is they don't understand rhyming words. I love rhyming words. I love writing poetry. I love the sound of our language and playing with words. And they don't hear rhyming words. They don't hear the cat and hat and bat. They don't hear that. They have that memory for nursery rhymes, that children who can't repeat a nursery rhyme. Humpty Dumpty, Mary Had a Little, any of those, if they have a hard time with that. Adding new vocabulary words. Children have trouble adding those new vocabulary words that they hear parents, you know, and parents or caregivers that use, and then can they use that? And then they just don't like to look at books. They don't. They have aversion to print. It's just that it doesn't mean anything to them. They can't make meaning of it. So those are the things we really look for. Identifying sounds. Breaking words apart, you know, do they hear that baseball is really two syllables? There's two words put together. We're looking for, but, you know, and as they get older, we, you know, because a lot of kids slip through the cracks, they're pretty good auditory,
yeah.
and they're good auditory learners, and they can give it back, but when pencil comes to paper, can they give it to us? Just sight words. If we have a second or third grader that's still having trouble with the word said, because, you know, S-A-I-D, there's no way you sound that word out. Or do you teach how, you know, it's just, you
yeah.
have to know it says said.
Yeah.
If they're still having trouble remembering those words, then we have problem. And many times it's our older kids, it shows up in their writing. If you look, you know, looking at a child's writing example is such a good indicator for me when I can look at that and go, oh, just their spelling patterns and how, you know, what they're writing. And then, of course, reading fluently. If you're having trouble reading, then you should be, you know, reading fluently, sounding accurately and without expression, then there's a big indicator. So. And, of course,
that's
spelling.
Really,
one is spelling. If you don't hear sounds and your teacher is asking you to sound out the word or to sound it out to spell it, how do you possibly do that? There's no way you can do that, you know.
Wow, it's just amazing.
So
and I have to go back to something you
sure.
said earlier, Kath.
Sure.
Okay, and that is this. How can you not – I can't comprehend this. How can you not hear a rhyme? If you use cat and hat. How could you possibly
Correct.
Not hear that?
Because you're processing it different than you and me. You and I are using different parts of unimpaired brain. They're using a different part of their brain. So their processing is very different. So if you ask them, and when I work with working with dyslexic kids, if you ask them to isolate a sound, when I say, how many sounds do you hear in cat? I hear three. I hear k, a, they hear one.
Yeah.
They hear cat. They can't
wow.
take those words apart. So, you know, we're asking to put words together and take them apart and change the first sound, you know, keeping the onset and the rhyme. And they're just looking at you going, what? You know, those are the
wow.
things that we work on. So we have to break it down. We have to break down our language, which is not easy. English is not easy.
Oh,
when we
horrible
have
language.
And just
horrible
teach it
language.
Thank you. We have six syllable types in our language, and if we can teach those six syllable types, along with all our other words that do not follow any of the rules, because we have rules in our language, and if we can teach those rules and get them to understand how our language works, then all of these difficulties they're having start falling in place.
It's just fascinating to me, A, how the brain works, and B, how we get start building around it. Okay, to get the
yes.
get so to understand it's almost impossible, and I know there's a neurological thing you explained it beautifully to realize that there are people who don't hear a rhyme between cat, hat, rat, cat, that they all sound the same. Okay,
they
and they're not here. It's wow. That's a wake up call for me anyway. I have to tell you. Okay, so this is a good question for these days. You know, we've got this. What's the things we need to do with online learning, remote learning, whatever the heck we want to call it right now? Okay, what do we? How can we work this with remote learning? That's still in everybody's mind these days. So.
Well, you know, there, and I'm just going to speak from what I know.
Sure.
There's lots of.
You're the guest. You're the expert. That's what we want to hear. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I've worked with dyslexic kids and love working with dyslexic kids because they use, and what I have found is, you know, they use such a different part of their brain. They see things differently. And I keep track of the kids that I've had over the years. And they are your kids. I have the dyslexic kids that I worked with from second grade to fifth grade. She's now a master welder who can make anything. And it's just to me, I'm thinking, wow.
Wow.
That's just,
I love
it. Yeah, exactly.
I love it's a she, too.
It is a she. Absolutely a she. I mean, so, you know, they're so gifted in somewhere, you know, they find this because of how their brain and how it's all working. They find those things. I have another girl, and I've worked with lots of boys, too. One of my little boys, wins every fishing tournament he's in. Now, tell me, he just found that one thing he's really, really good at. And he's stuck with it, and he's still doing it. Another little girl, she gets into acting. You know, a lot of our Hollywood stars are dyslexic.
Oh, yeah.
Steven Spielberg is the biggest, you know, he's the biggest advocate there that for dyslexia, which is, I think, is very interesting.
It sure is. And you know, there's an interesting side to that, too, because Steven Spielberg, and there are many other people like this, but he has to put together a story in order. And the thing about dyslexia, people come to mind, is the reversal of things, okay? And, they, you know, they interpret it differently. But to put a story that makes sense together in order, that's really saying something. That's really overcoming a serious disability, I got to tell you.
Right. Well, and if you've ever listened to any of his talks, his movie Goonies is really about him, how he felt when he was going to school.
Wow.
And he hung out with him.
I haven't seen. I got to check out Goonies.
You got to check it out if you've not seen the movie. It's about him. I mean, it's based on, you know, he hung out with those kids that were a little bit different, you know, because he was, and he knew he was different. Didn't know why. We didn't, like you said, we didn't say that dyslexic word back then.
He's worth about 200 times, 2,000 times what all of us are worth put together.
Yeah,
so he's still
absolutely.
Different. Yeah, still hanging out with a special group. Okay, so let's get back. Online learning, what can we do with online learning and dyslexic students? We're going to have them.
Well, we need to find, we need to work with them on, it needs a lot of repetition to go over that cat is, you know, segmenting sounds so that they can hear those sounds in isolation and then put back together again. We need to work on blending those sounds and then manipulating sounds. So we need to segment it, how many sounds. Then we need to be able to identify, you know, the sounds and blend them together to make the word. And then to manipulate, you know, take the beginning sound off of cat and add the S to make it fat or make it R. Then we also need to work on just the alphabet and the sounds. You know, we work on just putting that alphabet. You know, there's 26 letters in our alphabet. What's the initial sound? What's the final letter? What are the two medial letters? What are all the other letters? How many, you know, on and on and on. And then, of course, working on that fluency. So where they can, what's really great is having them read, and as they're reading, let them record it so that they can hear themselves back. How do we get better at anything? It's through practice. And then we also have to think about, with our older kids, we've got to talk about, you know, what is the meaning of our units of language? You know, we have, you know, when you get to those great big words and those great big kids, you know, is it the prefixes, the suffixes, the root words, putting all of that together. So there's a lot that we have to work on, that we need to work on. And so those are all the things when you're looking for a program to help your dyslexic or support your dyslexic student, those are the things you'd be looking for. Of course, the International Dyslexic Society, the association.
Yeah, they're nice folks.
Right, and they've been very vocal here during the pandemic because I'm a member, and so I get, they've done a lot of things for parents and webinars.
Yeah,
so.
They're good. They're very good.
Everybody's finding that this is what we have to do right now.
And let me ask you this, and this could be a challenge, in a state like Texas, since you're there, okay? That's ESL kids, okay? A lot of people just make the mistake they're ESL kids. No, there could be dyslexic, and I'm sure there are, ESL kids.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just talk about that for a second. I mean, that's a double whammy right there. So what do we do in that case?
When you think about dyslexia, it's not just in our country, it's all around the world.
Exactly.
But
here in the States, we're teaching the kids who are coming from other lands. And Texas is a good example. Yeah.
Very good example, especially in my area. Yes, we have.
Yeah.
So it took for us to identify a child that speaks a second language, we had to make sure that they were strong in one language. Were they strong in Spanish? Are they stronger in English? And then we were able to identify them. So it took, I remember I've identified other ESL students, the second language learners, but it took me longer because you have to make sure that is it because they're going between both languages, or is it really a problem with the one language? So we had to test them both, and you can test both in Spanish and in English, and then through the data that we collected through testing, you can then decide if they're dyslexic.
So let me ask you this. If a child, I'll use Texas as an example, they speak mostly Spanish, okay? They come from a Spanish-speaking household, whatever, all right?
Correct.
Now we find out they've got dyslexia, and let's just say they're in sixth or seventh grade.
Yeah.
All right. What do we do? Who teaches them? Is it a Spanish ESL, quote, special ed teacher? Where do we go for like that? It's tough.
It is tough, it's tough. But we would stick with in my experience, we would stay with the English because that's what they're going to need to be, successful. And so that would be you'd have a trained person. We in the state of Texas, we have to screen everybody in kindergarten, first and second for dyslexia. So we're getting better at it, but then. Like you said, if they get into that upper grade because they've fallen through the cracks or whatever.
Or they come in late. Their family moves
they
here.
Come in late. Absolutely.
Yeah, and they're
so
10 year, 12 years
sure
old.
Right. So we have to make sure, can they do all of those things, manipulate and segment and blend all in their language to say they're dyslexic,
it's
difficult.
Tough.
But very difficult. But in Texas, we're doing really good about training all our teachers to recognize and give them the tools they need to support a dyslexic child. We're doing a whole lot better. I mean, we've made huge strides here in Texas. But I'm fortunate enough that I do get to go across the United States, and we're getting there. Some states are slower than others, but we're at least recognizing that. And the statistics show that one in five are dyslexic. One in five.
That
let
amazing.
That sink in, because if you're thinking in a classroom of 20 kids, four children in that classroom are probably dyslexic. So
isn't
we have
amazing?
To have teachers. Understand what it is and be prepared. And so what else can that teacher do? So as I go around, I see more and more teachers are, districts are, schools are sending teachers to be trained to get the fundamentals to know what to look for and how to help that child before they're, before we go that step that we're, like you said, that phone call to tell a parent that, we have tested your child for dyslexia. And yes, they are dyslexic. That's a hard phone call. I made many
it
of
sure
them.
Is a hard phone call. Nobody wants to believe anything's wrong with their not that anything standing in the way of their child's education. Wrong was too strong a word there.
And that's true. But I always, in telling a parent, I also followed up by saying, but let me tell you, I'm going to help your child. I'm going to promise you this, that we're going to do everything we have, and the success rate we have had with our students who have. Had that specialized training, a teacher that's been trained who can give them what they need. They have done, like I said, I speak for the children that I've worked with over the years. They're all doing well. because we gave
bless
them
your
the
heart,
tools
lady.
To be successful.
Yeah, you know,
I love what I do, and that's why, you know, that's
it
why.
It comes across,
even,
believe me, Kathy.
Know, well, thank
it,
you. I do love what I do, and I love working with students.
Right, and I'm going to ask you one thing, okay, and I'm doing this because I know Waterford's good at this. If people, should people go over, they can go to waterford.org, okay, what should they look for in terms of products that help with dyslexia? Because you're an implementation specialist over there, and I love that company, you know, that institute. Tell me, what should they look for?
Well, you're going to look for when I talk to people, look at our phonics lessons, look at how we go from segmenting to blending to manipulating. Look at our phonological, you know, where we have a mouth showing them the placement of that sound they're working on. Look at all the pieces, and look at language, how to acquire new words. What do we use that, you know, through songs, through books, through practice, through instruction, and it just, you know, it just keeps building and building as the child, you know, because Waterford is personalized, individualized instruction, and so as the child goes through the program, according to how they answer, they get the support they need, and so those are the things that you would look for in any program, whether it's a program online, such as that you do on a computer, or even if you're hiring a tutor, what are you going to be doing? How are you going to be helping, you know, face-to-face? So those are the things that you would look for.
It's good stuff. I got to tell you, Kathy, thanks a million for being with us today. Thank you.
It is my pleasure.
It was my pleasure as well. You stay safe down there. Okay, you get a mask that covers you 100%, like a burqa.
Oh, I don't
like
worry.
A burqa.
I don't go out without a mask.
Good girl.
I don't go out without a mask, that's for sure.
Good girl.
That is for
stay
sure.
Stay safe down there. It's a hot zone. It'll end, but it's a hot zone right now in Houston. So be careful.
It absolutely is. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Be careful. Stay safe, and thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you. Thanks, Larry. And thanks for all
you. Thanks, Kath. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, from Waterford Institute, waterford.org, they are a great company. Okay, I'm not embarrassed at all to say that, waterford.org. Okay, good folks, okay? That was Kathy Ambridge, who is one of their implementation specialists and obviously an expert in early learning and also, in this case, dyslexia. So thanks, Kathy. That was wonderful. We'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Please go over to ace-ed.org and sign up for our consortium. If you want to do Twitter with us, it's EduTalkRadio. EduTalkRadio, and Facebook is Larry Jacobs, and EduTalkRadio, and the LinkedIn is me, Larry Jacobs, who I am. So thanks for listening today. As I said to Kathy, please stay safe, and thank you, Water.